Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 81. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And joining me today is Chaz Hayden from Princeton, New Jersey. Chaz is a writer and YouTuber with SMA, and I'm really excited to have him on today. So, Chaz, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Kevin, thanks for having me. I'm super excited.
Absolutely. I think this will be a really great conversation. Chaz and I met a few weeks ago through an SMA Zoom call, and we both, you know, have similar interests. So I think this will be a really fun conversation. But before we get started, if everyone could please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast was brought to you by Genentech, the makers of an FDA-approved treatment for SMA. To learn about our study results across different types of people with SMA, visit approvedforsma.com. That's approvedforsma.com.
Okay. Well, Chaz, why don't you start off just telling listeners a little bit about yourself and what it was like for you growing up with SMA?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm 24 years old. I have SMA type 1 to type 2. That's just what I tell people because I was diagnosed when I was 3 months of age. And the amount of SMN proteins, I have three SMN proteins. And type 2 because I've lived past the life expectancy of someone with type 1. And yeah, just my overall strength. I think, you know, growing up with SMA, it's funny because I was thinking about this recently. It wasn't really different. I didn't see myself as different from anyone else. And I think that's just a testament to like my parents and just the situation I was in. Like the town I was in, there really wasn't any other disabled children that were kind of at the level I was. A lot of them were multiply handicapped or had mental disabilities as well. I was kind of forced or kind of pushed by my parents to really get out there and make friends. And they never really let me use my SMA or my disability or being in a wheelchair as an excuse. So yeah, I never saw myself as being different or kind of struggling in that sense socially. And then also having an older brother who was able-bodied, seeing him with all his friends. And then, you know, the best part is my house was always a house that all the friends were over. So my parents always, you know, kind of wanted, you know, whether it was my brother's friends, my friends, for our house to kind of be the party place to hang out there. And so it was everyone mingling together. And then my brother played sports. So it was like, sports has been a huge part of my life growing up, and my dad coached him. And it's funny because like, when you have a disability, obviously you can't play. I mean, there are adaptive sports out there, but in my situation, none that I could really still do independently. Watching my brother play, watching my dad coach him, it's kind of like, well, how else can I get involved? Like, how can I relate to that as well? So there's a lot of like, you know, when my brother would come home from practice or a game, it's like just talking about it with him, or on Sundays, watching the NFL, you know, just being engaged in that sense. And I think it's funny because it's not till when I was much older, probably when I got to college or even now in my 20s, where I really started to connect with other people with disabilities or other people with SMA, and start to build those relationships and see myself as someone that is different, but not in a bad way.
That's great. And hearing you say that, actually, like I have two older siblings, and my brother is also a big sports fanatic, and we're just a couple years apart. And it's funny because I never really got into sports, but like we had our own interests. But hearing you talk about that, kind of like, you know, his friends come over, your friends come over, you have that sense of community. That was very similar to us too. Like we would, we knew each other's friends and growing up and still do. And we hang out a lot. And so it's really, I think for me as well, that was instrumental to my growing up.
Yeah. I think when I was, maybe in elementary, I lived in a cul-de-sac my entire childhood until I went to college. But we would play roller hockey in the cul-de-sac, and I would be the goalie. You know, we had a net, and I would sit there, and in the net, I had a stick, I had a helmet, and everyone else would be on rollerblades, and they would take shots at me. And, like, I didn't care because I was a part of the game, and it was fun, and I was in it. And I think back on that now, I'm like, Jesus, I really took a tennis ball to the chest and to the knees, you know? But it was just fun. And, yeah, I mean, my brother is he's 4 years older than I am, so a little bit of a difference, but... Yeah, all of my friends and his friends, we were just in the same house and just hanging out together. And I think that's kind of what my parents wanted, so that I had, you know, obviously when you're in a wheelchair, your house is probably the only house that you can get into, unless you're in an apartment complex or something. And then, you know, maybe you can get into other people's apartments. But in the town that I lived in, yeah, I never once was able to get into my other friend's house unless, like, my dad went over the day before and set up a portable ramp in their garage. And even then, that was a pain in the butt. So it's just easier for everyone to come over and hang over at our place.
Right, right. That's great. And oh, definitely similar for me as well. And speaking too about growing up, so I've been watching some of your YouTube videos, and you made one about how you actually went to college very early on. And part of this was because of your high school's lack of accessibility. So can you talk about that and then just how you adapted to that transition when you were really young, you know, just early teenage years?
Yeah, I started college when I was 15. So, yeah, super young. There was a program at the community college where I live in New Jersey, where I used to live, where you could go there full time, earn a high school diploma by taking certain general education credits that then get submitted back to the state of New Jersey. It's separate from a GED. You have to maintain above a certain grade point average, and you have to kind of write like an essay, and you have to, when you get into the program, you have to take the normal placement exams that you would as an incoming freshman and place out of remedial, you know, English, math, and science. So, you know, going into that, I did my freshman year of high school, and, you know, just my brother going through our town high school and everything that, you know, he played sports and was able-bodied, so it was fine for him, but we just knew, my parents knew that they just weren't able to offer me the technology just to be as independent as I possibly could, that no matter how much we fought with them, and we heard about a program at the county college where I could go half day there and half day to high school, and I was like, all right, maybe that'll work out. And I ended up doing so well, fortunately, on the placement exams that they told me about this other opportunity to be there full time. And, you know, at first, like you said, how did you kind of transition? I think when that happened, I wasn't even really thinking about my age in the sense of like, oh my God, like everyone's going to be 4 or 5 years older than me, or even being at a community college, there's all different ages there. So, you know, there's people that are 10, 15, 30, 40 years older that are students. And I never thought about it because the sort of the faculty at the community college kind of were like, hey, we've done this before. Like, you don't need to tell anyone as long as you act mature and get good grades. Like, the professors won't even know as well. Unless you want people to know, you don't have to tell them. But I distinctly remember, like, the day I got accepted into that program, my parents took me out to dinner just to kind of celebrate. And I remember being really quiet at dinner and them asking me like, what was going on? And I think I was just trying to like grasp like the enormity of what it meant, like what I was doing. But I wasn't necessarily thinking about like I'm going to college. It was like, what about my friends? Like, do I still get to see my friends? Are they going to talk to me? Like, how am I going to do this? And then they kind of put my mind at ease, like, hey, this is something that's going to put you in a great position. You're going to be able to be independent because, like, all the placement exams I took to even get into the program, they were all on the computer. So, like, right off the bat, everything was already on the computer. Like, all my textbooks were going to be on the computer. Like, we never even asked for anything. And, like, when we went in to do the test, they were like, oh, what accessible technology do you need? And my mom was like, are we being punked right now? Like, we thought it was a joke, you know? So, yeah, it was like all those kind of fears were put aside. And then my parents are like, hey, you just gotta, if you want to do this, you just gotta go all in. And I, on that drive home from dinner, I remember it just going straight to my head, unfortunately. I was like, you know what? Damn, I'm smart. Like, I think I can do this. And I never thought about the tough transition. And if you watch one of my YouTube videos, I kind of talk about how I was humbled pretty fast after I failed my first college test. But other than that, I think it was pretty smooth.
That's really cool. And I mean, like you said, it is an accomplishment. It's, you know, that's not something every teenager can say. But going back to like, how did you kind of balance it with, you know, still having like quote unquote high school experience and staying in touch with friends while being on the college campus full time?
It's funny because I was reading through a journal that I wrote during my first few months there, which are some of the videos that I put up on my YouTube channel.
I watched that one, yeah.
Yeah. And I have a whole bunch of them. And when I was reading through the journal, which is like 50 pages, I didn't write all the time. I kind of skipped around month to month or even a year or two sometimes. And I found parts where I was like talking about being alienated from some of my childhood friends. And I really didn't even remember that. I had to ask my mom, like, hey, did so-and-so really say this stuff to me? And I really didn't remember. Like, and my mom said, yeah, like, you know, I remember they just didn't understand what you were doing. And it's not that they were like mean about it. It was just that they didn't get to see you every day and they didn't fully, you know, grasp the program and the opportunity that you had. So to them, it kind of came off that you were abandoning them or you bailed on them. And I think, you know, just being not around them all the time and being at a totally different, you know, educational place, I started to make new friends. And, you know, at community college, it can be tough because it is very transient in the sense where obviously there's no dorm. So like people are just showing up to your class and then they go home. But what people don't understand is there are opportunities to get involved. So right off the bat, I joined the student ambassadors, which they gave tours of the campus. I became a senator on the student government. So it almost felt like I was in high school because they had those sort of after class kind of programs that you could join different clubs like the Young Entrepreneurs. And then I was a part of the Honor Society there. And I went to the meetings and I made friends and I was a part of the activity. So you did still get that sort of camaraderie just in a different, you know, setting.
Sure, sure. And yeah, I mean, that was, I think back to when I started college, like I just did 4-year university. And it's interesting you said too about like the age groups is so, you know, diverse as it is. I mean, there are people, you know, who are, you know, around teenage and early 20 years, but then there, like you said, there's people who go, to back to school later in life. And so I think it's really kind of cool to be exposed to that as a teenager, because you learn to talk to a wide range of people. And I think for me, at least, that helps a lot living with SMA. Like, I mean, that's making those connections and relating to people from all different backgrounds. I think it's a really cool thing to have.
Yeah, definitely. And it definitely pushed me out of my shell. I mean, just in terms of age range, my best friend when I was there, and still my best friend, is 8 years older than me. So yes. I was 15 at the time, and he's in his mid-20s. Yeah. You know, and it's just because he went to college at a later time. He took a break and then went back for his education. And there was people that were maybe only 3 or 4 years older than me. They were around my brother's age. And a lot of them I'm still best friends with, you know, I mean, all of them. And I think for me, it was a good opportunity to push myself because everyone that I've been friends with them since I was a child. You know, so this was a way for me to be like, all right, I made friends when I was a kid and I grew up with them. Everyone knows me. Can I go somewhere now where no one knows me? The first thing they see is my wheelchair. Unfortunately, that's just a fact, you know. Can I overcome that? And I did, you know. I was still able to be social and fit in and do the things that I wanted to do.
That's great. That's great. Now, college is the best. I remember when we were on the Zoom call a few weeks ago, we were talking to some younger SMAers that were either just starting college or, you know, or finishing up high school. And that was the thing we said was like, oh, enjoy those years as much as you can, because it's the best. But yeah,
it is. Yeah. I tell people now, like, you know, after I graduated from my community college, I did 2 years there, including the credits I had to do for the high school diploma. I was like, hey, this is a 2-year junior college. I'm going to do the high school part and the associate degree in 2 years. So I took so many credits and classes just to kind of finish them both up in 4 semesters. And I did summer and winter classes. But when I transferred to a university, now you're kind of this sort of, you go from a big fish in a small pond to a small fish in a huge pond, going to a university of 50,000 students, where I was at a community college that maybe had 2,000, 3,000 students, and pretty much everyone knew me. I knew all the teachers. I knew the president of the college, you know, just because of the size of it, you know. And now it's like a whole nother ball game that you have to deal with going to a university.
Absolutely. It's quite a transition, you know. Well, Chaz, that's great. And we will continue in just a minute, but first, if everyone can listen to another brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is made possible by a sponsorship from Genentech. Are you living with SMA, or are you a caregiver for someone who is? A treatment has been FDA approved based on studies of different types of people living with SMA. Genentech extends a special thanks to all the individuals, families, and healthcare providers who participated in the studies that led to making this treatment option a reality. To learn more about this treatment, visit approvedforsma.com.
Okay, so like I said earlier, you know, writing plays a big part in your life. So does music. And you can relate this to talking about what you studied in college and how that might differ from it. But can you talk about when you wanted to pursue a career in writing and how that evolved?
In college, I was a business finance major. So very, very different than what I'm doing now with my life, which I don't mind at all. My community college was a business major. When I transferred to the University of Arizona, I was a finance major, got a degree in that. And I've always had a passion for being creative and writing and music as well. Like, even as a kid, I'd write music, I'd write songs. When I was 10, I wrote rap music. I wanted to be the next Eminem. You know, I just wrote poetry, whatever it was, short stories for different classes that I was in. So I always had a fun time with it. Creative writing. I hated persuasive essays. I never enjoyed that part of school or English or whatever. But I think, you know, in terms of when I figured I wanted to be a writer, was probably towards the end of my time at Arizona, maybe my last semester. Even after I graduated, I just had so much free time on my hand. Because I unfortunately did not have a job right away, and I moved back from Arizona to New Jersey again, that I was just constantly reading. Like, I was reading everything, and I was going through probably, I don't know, 2 or 3 novels a month. And as I was doing it, I was like, hey, you know, I think I could do something like this. And since I had so much time every day just being home, one day I just sat down and started writing a story I had in my head that I wanted to be a novel. I had no idea what I was doing. And it took me, you know, maybe a year to do it, because then I ended up getting an internship in the city and traveling for that. But it wasn't until after university that I really decided, hey, this is something I want to do. And then, unfortunately, just over the years, I've kind of had to put it on pause just because of my full-time day jobs. And that first novel I started after I graduated college, you know, I tried to shop that around to different literary agents, and it just never went anywhere, because it just honestly wasn't very good. And like I said, I didn't even know what I was doing, but I had fun doing it. So then what I did was I started to join different writing groups at the public library, I would go to one of them was at a Starbucks. That was a few towns away from where I was. And I just started to learn. And I started to write different things, poetry, short stories, whatever it was, more music. So yeah, being creative has always kind of been in me, just not something I really focused on until now.
Sure, sure. Oh, and as a writer myself, I mean, I know how it goes with, you know, managing day jobs and all these things, and then also getting rejected. I mean, Stephen King had a wall of rejections when he was growing up and
writing
short stories from an early age to different magazines and whatnot. And yeah, no, it's definitely a journey, but you have found success in that regard though now. Can you talk about your current novel now and where that's gone?
Yeah, so about, I don't know, maybe the beginning of 2019, I really hadn't written anything that was too big. I'd written a few short stories. One of them got published in a local newspaper that does a summer fiction edition, and that was fun. And I was just going to my writing group. So I'm like, hey, let me shelve this one manuscript that I've been shopping around for a year and a half, 2 years now. And I had a different idea, focusing on a character with a disability, with someone that has SMA. And I've never been very good about writing about myself, whether that's a memoir or just, you know, a biopic in general. I've just never been good at it. So I was like, well, maybe I can sort of share my experiences or things that I've gone through, but in a fictional kind of way. So I, you know, I kind of put all these things that I've been through over the past, you know, 20 some odd years of my life, and you know, put them into a story. I started that manuscript in like February 2019, and it just flowed so easily out of me that I finished it in like 9 months, and maybe even like 7 months. And in the fall of 2019, I shopped it around to maybe two agents, and the one that I wanted the most got back to me. I sent him the first 5 pages of it and a query letter, and I'm not joking, in 5 minutes, he answered me and said, send me the rest of this. And 2 weeks later, I signed with him. He just loved it. It was like, and he said, you know, it just was all about timing. He just happened to be at his desk right when I sent that email, and he loved the first 5 pages and he loved the rest of the manuscript. And so then the pandemic hit, and which was kind of a blessing for me, because now I was home and I was able to revise the manuscript with my agent before submitting it to publishers. Mm-hmm. So we had all that free time. We spent about 7 or 8 months going through 3 revisions just with my agent. And then in August, shopped it around. We sent it out to, I don't know, maybe 10 to 12 different publishers. That was maybe a total of 20 different editors at those different publishers and publishing houses and presses. And yeah, then in end of August, it ended up going to auction, which means I had multiple offers. I had 4 different offers, and I signed with Candlewick, which is an indie sort of small publisher. They're very known for their children's and young adult, which is what I write. My novel is a young adult novel. It's called The First Thing About You. The main character has SMA. He's a teenager who's just trying to figure out how to fit in. He has a really fun, spunky nurse that attends with him, and just kind of balancing that relationship and the relationships he wants to have with his peers. And it's coming out fall 2022.
That's fantastic. Congratulations. I mean, it's kind of funny you say, because I know we've talked about this a little bit off the record, but like I have a graphic novel shopping around as well. Like my team has an agent with it, and so we're in that process as well. But it's it's congratulations. It's definitely an endeavor, and yeah, it's you never know, you know, whose desk it might land on. You just that perseverance goes a long way.
Yeah, you really never know. I mean, it was such an odd process. It's like you kind of build it up in your head, and you know, I'm really happy that I was, and really super fortunate to be where I am now. And but you never really know what's going to catch people's eye. I mean, I know people that different publishers and different editors that responded were like, Haven liked it, but it just didn't go in a direction that we thought it would. And I think it's because there's so much. I try to be really authentic in everything I write. And I find that now in young adult literature, just anything that's written, whether it's a Netflix show or a movie for young people, oftentimes tries to kind of make everything black and white, right and wrong, what's good or bad. And in this story, there's a lot of gray area in what's said and what's done. And there's a lot of very provocative and shocking moments that I think might've been disturbing, but those are real life. Real life, you don't always have a right or wrong choice or what's good or bad. So I wanted to put that into the story and make sure that, you know, we have young people who are reading this and understanding not just a disability, but someone else's life and the things that might happen to them.
That's so true. And well, and that brings me to my next question, because I'm curious. So, you know, the protagonist has SMA, and I imagine a lot of it was drawn from personal experiences, but how much was it kind of based on your life? And then how much was entirely fictional when you were writing?
I think what I did is I just thought about like every nurse I've ever had, and I kind of picked out the most interesting ones and all the crazy kind of drama and you know, relationships that we've gone through. I've had so many amazing nurses over the years and nurses that I've bonded with so fast and then left for one reason or another, and nurses that I've had for years, decades, even, I still stay in contact. So I kind of took all of those stories and all the stories that I've kind of, and things that I've experienced over 24 years and then made it a little bit more drama. I added a little bit more drama, fluffed it up a little bit. But there are, you know, a bunch of scenes in there that have happened to me. When you read it, there's a scene with the main character in the bathroom with one of his nurses and something that she does. And then there's another scene at the end where the main character is in the bathroom with his older brother and something that happens to them. And I just started to think, wow, a lot of really wild stuff has happened to me in the bathroom. I don't know why, but I'm sure other people with disabilities can relate to that, that everything nuts and wild happens in the bathroom. So
100%. I mean, my editors at SMA News Today often laugh at how many bathroom jokes I make, but it's because of that. I mean, there are so many scenarios that are not common for people outside the disability community, but are totally relevant to our lives. And I think it's important to include those things because it's like you said, it's authentic, and it, you know, I think it'll be both relatable for people with disabilities and also kind of eye-opening for people outside our community. You know?
Yeah. So those two scenes are realistic. There's a scene where the protagonist goes on a date with a classmate of his, and that kind of dynamic in the day that plays out is sort of built off of a real life date that I went on and kind of how I was feeling and how that person I was on a date with, the things that, you know, we kind of, she had to do because I can't feed myself. I need help, you know? So kind of the nerves and the jitters and I'm like, oh my God, does she know she has to feed me kind of thing? And so there's that. And yeah, I think there's just small things, like things that his friends say that my friends have said to me, just funny things that I kind of brush off that we joked about. I think that, you know, I've always kind of had thick skin. I never really get offended by a lot. I know that a lot of things that people will say or joke about, they're not always malicious. I think it's you can tell what's malicious and what's not malicious. And I like to have fun, and I like that my friends feel comfortable busting on me and you know, and kind of joking around. So there's a lot in there in that as well. But I think the overall kind of story is something that is a similar situation that I kind of went through, that I kind of fictionalized to make it a little bit better for a novel, and probably a situation that in my head, how I wished it would have gone in real life, but it didn't. And then also, you know, just Just those little tiny things, like I said, of everyday life, of your mom having to be your backup if a nurse can't be there, you know, or your morning routine, your parents have to help you in the shower, or you know, just different accessibility issues that I bring up. But one of the publishers said to me the thing that they loved is that at its heart, it's not a disability story. And I love to hear that. I think that really meant a lot to me that they saw the heart of it first, which is just a teenager trying to be a teenager. And then the disability is secondary. And I think that's amazing.
That's great. I mean, oh, it's always encouraging when, you hear comments like that where it's the emphasis is on the human story, and it's just this happens to be character with a disability that you're viewing that story through. So that's
Yeah, and it's funny because, like you said, how much of it is true. And now I think about it, after I wrote it, some of the stuff has actually happened to me, almost like I manifested it in some way. So I don't know, I was going through something last month. I'm like, oh my God, I'm in this chapter of my book right now, and I have no idea how to react. And it's just funny. I'm like, geez, what did I do to myself? What is this?
it's like a subconscious thing in art imitating life and all that. That's great. That's great. Well, no. Well, Chaz, thank you so much for sharing. And so in talking about your writing, your YouTube videos, and then your day job, can you just kind of walk us through what a typical day looks like for you? Obviously, it's been affected by the pandemic. I mean, we're all working from home, but can you give us just an idea of how, what does your day look like between managing caregivers and working and all the things you do?
So before the pandemic, I had two nurses. One was during the day. They would accompany me to my job at the office. And then I had a night nurse that would be there while I was sleeping to do some of my night routine and help me get to bed and then whatever I needed while I was sleeping. And then, of course, my parents are around as well. And, you know, as soon as the pandemic hit last March, you know, it was sort of a group decision between me and my mom, my dad to cancel any care that we had coming into the home at the beginning, just because, you know, we didn't know what was going on, and you can't control what other people do outside. As much as you trust them, and the two nurses I had, one of them I've known for a decade, and one of them I've known for half a decade, so I trust them. It was just they also have lives, they have children to take care of. They have things that they need to do. So my parents are like, you know what? Let's just hunker down in our apartment. We can do these things. So yeah, in everyday life, it's like, you know, I get up. I wear a breathing machine at night. I wear a BiPAP, so it's time to just get up, have my mom or whoever take that off, and do some of my morning meditation. You know, get in the shower. Help someone help me get dressed and get out the door to my job, and then a nurse meeting me there, and just sort of, you know, working. And I mean, it's funny too. It's like I think about it now, it's like most of my day is not any different than anybody else's day, except for like the culmination of like 30 minutes where like it's about the entire day where I need help in the bathroom, or I need someone to like feed me, or I need to take a medication or something. But other than that, it's like me sitting at a desk at a computer.
Right. It's been our lives for a lot of us in the past year, especially.
Yeah, and now that I'm home, it's great. I mean, either way, I live 10 minutes from my office. But now it's like I can get up an hour and a half later than I usually would, just because I can roll out of bed, you know, and just go right on my laptop and not have to worry about, you know, waking up and eating breakfast and driving to the office and all that stuff. So it's been, honestly, I don't mind working from home. I feel like I've been just as productive and just as efficient. And yeah, if I had to do it for the rest of my life, I mean, I'd want to get out and see people, but you know, it is what it is. And we have Zoom and we have other video chat platforms, so I deal with it.
Sure. Well, and especially if you end up becoming a full-time writer down the road, I mean, you can kind of do that from wherever as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the goal. I think that's the dream for everybody to be a full time. And yeah, we'll see. I mean, yeah, we can do that from anywhere. And I know my parents are always like, Can't we just buy a house like on the beach and you can just stare at the ocean and write? I'm like, no, it's not very inspiring to me.
That's funny. Yeah, I mean, inspiration comes from different places and writers have different preferences. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's great. Well, and Jazz, wrapping up here, and it's been a great conversation, but thinking about all the things you've said, do you have any advice for others in the SMA community, whether it's about anything about independent living, working, anything you want to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, there's been so much. Something I just say is like just don't be afraid to kind of put yourself out there, get out there. I know sometimes it's really hard to not feel like your disability or your situation gets in the way. And obviously everybody's circumstance is different. Like SMA is such a vast disability that everyone is completely different. I'm different from you and you're different from me and what you're capable of doing. And but I go through the days too, even now, as much as I've done, where I'm like, I can't do this because I'm in a wheelchair. But then I have someone in my life that's like, cut the bullshit, you know, cut the BS and get out there. You're not, you know, and just do it or whatever. Like reach out to a friend, chat with them, talk to them, go to college. Like just because you're in a chair doesn't mean you can't go to college. Like we're in the 21st century. Like you can get your degree online. You don't have to be on campus. Is on campus the normal? Yeah, it is, but that doesn't mean you have to deprive yourself of an education. So yeah, I just say just don't let it stop you from doing what you want to do.
That's great. That's great. Well, Chaz, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. This was a great conversation and best of luck on your novel. I look forward to that coming out. You said fall 2022.
Yep.
Awesome. And where else can people find you? I know you have your YouTube channel and social media.
Yeah, so on YouTube, Chaz Hayden, and then Instagram and Twitter at the Chaz Hayden. Give me a follow. I post kind of funny tweets with tweets that I think are funny, and then pictures of my beautiful face and of my dog. So you can enjoy those if you'd like.
You definitely got the sense of humor, especially for YouTube and Twitter and all that. And I've been enjoying your videos, watching those. This has been great. So.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, and I've seen your comic on Twitter, some of the little drawings that you posted. I think it's amazing, and I'm always enjoying the action figures you have in your bedroom. They're super fun to look at.
Thank you very much. That's the best compliment by far. I know. I mean, I work like in management, but I have no shame in having my bookshelf of graphic novels and action figures in the background whenever I'm on a call, because there's no sense in hiding who I am.
Yeah.
I'm not the typical business kind of persona. So
Yeah.
that's
Yeah.
awesome.
Neither am I.
No, exactly. You got to embrace who you are and the creativity spirit and all that. So absolutely. Well, Chaz, thank you so much again for coming on today. And for our listeners out there, you can find more stories like this by subscribing to this podcast. You can also check out our forums community, our YouTube channel, and everything on our main website at smanewstoday.com for the latest SMA news and perspectives. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com and be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.